photos round. But bear in mind that I've been a lot bigger and I would never let anyone take photos of me when I was even bigger. So today I'm going to talk about when I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And I suppose that where I'd like to start is with some of the writing I did at that time when I was writing about step three. And I talked about myself feeling like a pig in the trough, and I've heard that word here before, because at the time I came into OA, which was November 2013, I was quite a few kilos heavier, probably about 13 kilos heavier, and from December the 26th, 2013 until now I've been abstinent. At the time I came into OA and then found a sponsor and was doing step three, the most dominating sort of thought and vision and image I had in my mind is I'm a pig in the trough, and I've been working around the country, and I know we all do this, we work hard to put a front on, I've tried to put the professional front on, like a suit and everything, but I'm sure I spent half of my working life in the toilets, hanging over a bag from Tesco's, just throwing as much food into my face as possible. And even at that time, I had the memories of reading a story of a teacher, actually, that's found dead in the toilet through binging. So how and why did I come into OA, and what was life like before? Right, going back to childhood, until I was about 11, I don't have many memories of how food was, other than that one day, one Christmas, I put my new Christmas dress on, and I got up and I was eating all the chocolates around the tree before anybody else got up. And this dress, my mum had saved up for ages, and by the time she got up, I dribbled down it. And I remember her putting it in the washing machine and running it round to the council estate line on Christmas Day. So that when our relatives came later, I had that. So maybe there was something going on about food there. And when I shared recently, I remember saying, because I looked at my baby photos, and there's always that bit, isn't there, about all of these awful things happened in my life, I'm a terrible victim, this is why. But when I look back at my baby photos, I'm a twin, and when we both came out, my twin sister was so skinny, she had to go into a what do they call it, one of those little machines. And I was sort of all big and fat, and sort of sitting like that. So obviously I've been having a lot to eat in the womb. But that made me really think very hard about, I always blame my life and the things that happened to me, and without being too dramatic about it. So my childhood years were very unhappy, my mum and dad were always fighting, and neighbours called the police in the night, and there were sirens going. And somehow my twin and I learnt to go to school and be quite ordinary. I'd learn to fade into the background, and talk about the weather and things like that. But when my dad had to leave because my parents divorced, and I remember we couldn't afford to heat the house, we couldn't afford clothes, and my mother shared with me a lot about how she didn't know where to get the next meal from. And for some reason I thought I'd better stop eating. I'm sure there was a lot more going on then. And I think I had anorexia, although it was undiagnosed. And I remember not really wanting to eat anything for quite a period of time. And then my mother's new boyfriend appeared on the scene, very drunk, very violent, very big, very loud, and quite well off, and there was lots more money around, and we were going to be spending money. And at that stage, around about 12 or 13, all my memories were about trying to get food and eat and binge. In terms of spiritual things, my parents had sent me to a Sunday school, and I had no faith, but on the way home from school, I remember I used to crawl into the back of a church. I didn't really understand it. It was a bit dark. There might be chinks of sunlight. And I used to sit there and be really late home from school because I never, ever wanted to go home. It was always very unhappy and sad. So when I was in that church on the way home, sometimes I thought, well, what is this all about? Roll on to the age of 14, I ran away from home. And by then, I'd become very gross and big. I felt gross about myself. And when parents came to school for different events, they didn't recognise. My friend's parents said, "Oh, who's that?" And they said, "It's Jackie." Oh, since she got fat. And I deliberately tried. The only thing I ever succeeded at, and I didn't really feel it success, was studying, and I loved it, and it was my world. And I tried hard not to get good marks in tests so that I wouldn't have to go up onto the stage and be seen. I remember that. But at 14, I went to see my head teacher, and I said, "I really, really love school, and it's the most important thing in my life, but I'm running away from home tonight. Can I come back to school tomorrow?" And of course he asked me for the dress and the police took me back home. But at the age of 16, I ran away for good and no one could take me back again. And by then I'd become just non-stop eating. And the place that was found for me to stay was, it was a home, but it was a bit of a hostel for other runaways and all sorts of people. And I remember climbing up onto kitchen cabinets and getting boxes of chocolate that were put up at the top and cakes, and then going to try and buy more and replacing them. And then, for some reason, I managed to get a place to study my degree, but I didn't want to go anywhere because I felt so big and fat. But having said that, I did go off to Israel really, really rather large, with a large backpack and a huge tent dress and my boots, and then backpack around the Middle East. And when I came back, everyone said, "Oh, how exciting." And all I could remember is that I had a certain biscuit that was sold everywhere all around Jerusalem. And when I got to the top of Mount Sinai, the first thing I wanted to do was binge. That's all I ever did. I went across the Sahara and everyone said, "Oh, how exciting." And I couldn't bear not eating. And when I met some people that knew me at the other side, they didn't recognise me because I'd lost so much weight. But what I do remember is waking up in the tent of Anaya eating, I found some dates, Bedouins were passing, some dates I could eat. So it was such a relief after coming back from my travels. I didn't really enjoy my travels. It was all about where and how can I get food. And the reason I went on travels is because I had nowhere to go during my student life. I didn't have a home, so that's why I did it. So my life felt very unstable, and I decided that I had to get help, and if I tried to behave really oddly, I could perhaps get admitted to hospital. And I, having sort of had a man next door who used to get admitted to hospital, I tried, you know, I rang the doctor and said, "I started throwing my things around the room. I think, you know, I'm raving mad, you need to take me into hospital." He said, no. But anyway, like all of us, I found one or two places that I went to that could help with food, even though I wouldn't tell them exactly what my problems were. And I participated in a research project on women and overeating. And I thought it was quite a brave step to say, "Look, I think I've got this condition, and could you help me?" And I got worse. And then I said to them, "Well, it's because of doing this research I've got worse, and therefore I want to come into your treatment centre, residential." They said, "No, we don't normally do this for people who are overeating." And I really begged and pleaded with them because I wanted somebody to look after me. And I went in, and on my first day, I went to sit. I was the overeater, and I was with anorexics. Of course, I sat down to join them at the mealtime, and the chair collapsed, and they all started crying and said they wouldn't eat, and they'd become like me. So it was a terrible thing. In terms of faith, I did become a Christian. And I've spent many years going forward for prayer about food, and it didn't happen for me. I didn't ever stop overeating. I think I've had periods in my life where I've ate three meals a day, but then I've had handbags full of food. So I did find OA with AA some years ago. I don't have a drink problem, but I found a meeting that was combined. And I decided it wasn't for me. But more recently, before I came into OA that November 2013, I'd been travelling around the country and just non-stop binging in the office. I'd have my jacket on, but even though it was really hot, I'd have to undo my skirt. All my clothes wouldn't fit, and then I'd have to try and quickly find go out from the hotel and find some clothes because I'd binge and my stomach was distended. My husband came to stay and he'd been quite poorly. And for some reason, in all these years, I've managed to get a profession, find a man that I loved and put up with me. you know, have a little home, and etc. Nobody ever knew my terrible, terrible secret. But other than sometimes I appeared really big and bloated. So my husband came to stay with me, and I was in one of those periods where I'm saying, right, I'm just going to have 3 meals, white knuckle. And people brought us a tray of tea with a tiny little biscuit on the saucer. And I said to Alan, please eat it. I just cannot bear it. If I have that, I'll just go mad. And he forgot to eat it. And after 45 minutes, I went like that with this. And I cannot remember the next 3 days afterwards. It was just non-stop eating. I think I even threw up at work when I was not deliberately so sick. And my husband ended up in hospital with stress. He has all sorts of medical problems anyway. And I came back to London at the end of the contract, and I looked up MA from this years ago. Sorry, Reginald. And I walked into a room and everyone knew that I didn't have to say what I was doing. And it was just wonderful. I couldn't get abstinent straight away. And then I heard about Greenwich, and there was a lot of recovery here, so I came here. But my husband drove me, and there was a big sign outside saying, Overeaters Anonymous. And I said to my husband, I'm not going there. I bet everybody I work with in the East End all live in the street, and they're all going to be looking out the window. And he said, well, it's your life. And because actually, I've come near to death a number of times. I've come near to thinking, I'm sure a lot of us have thought, do we want to be here? I haven't got the courage to go on. I haven't got the courage to finish it. I know once I stepped in front of a bus because I was eating 2 bars of chocolate at once with my umbrella like that, and I didn't see the bus in the hospital. Once I was eating chocolate on my bike and went head over heels. There's all sorts of things I've done. And also the relationships I've got into before I met my husband have been abusive, violent relationships to repeat my childhood. So I know I've had lots of issues that I've not been emotionally sober at all. So doing step three was very, actually even coming here and thinking I could be helped when I spent years going up to the front of church and praying that something would happen. And what step three here has taught me is it's not just about praying and having faith, it's about doing something. And if I roll back to even coming up to step one when I came here, people said, how keen are you to become abstinent? I said, oh, very. They said, okay, well, we'll get a sponsor. Oh, I don't know, you know. Well, okay, ask someone today to be your sponsor. And get up tomorrow, ring your sponsor, and then do your 3 meals. And I thought, wow, no one's ever said this. Every time I pay to go and see someone, oh, my stepdad was really violent. You know, my mum used to hit me around the head when she, this happened, that happened, either. You poor thing, I think 6 years of paying us for counselling, you know, or, you know, 6 years of CBT or whatever. But here I heard the message, just get up and do it. So I got my sponsor that day and I got up and I started my abstinence. Now, the bit that was the hardest with step three, having studied theology and philosophy and the meaning of life, you know, and binge my way through all of that, I didn't get any further. But when I come here, I wanted to apply all of that. What's the philosophy? You know, is it a cult? You know, are you weird people? Is it a set of weird people? But when I met my boyfriends, it wasn't, you know, are you going to treat me nice? And even when they didn't treat me nice, I still stayed with them, you know. Or food. I knew it was wrong, but I did it. Stealing food at uni, stealing food in the office, or eating most of the Christmas stuff that was there. That wasn't right. I didn't investigate that. I didn't investigate any of it. But here I had to investigate. And what I had to learn is, give up the debating society and just do it. There were excuses I used for not being abstinent. You know, I don't have food with me or I'm stuck somewhere. And there was a watershed. I know that when I'm, a lot of my work, I have to walk around and find different places. And I always didn't mind that because I binged. But when I became abstinent, I was aware that I was walking around, and what would I do in the rain and the cold, no matter how many fleeces and waterproofs I had on, and I could no longer binge. And one day, I just thought, that's it, I've had 3 months abstinence, and I've got to binge. I'd done step three, and it's not working. So I just said, God, this is it. You know, I'm sorry, I committed to you, but I cannot do this. And I was lost. There was a bog, there was grass, there was an estate over there. I've got to find a garage. And I saw a garage. And I walked towards it and I got in and I thought, wow, in the middle of this shop was a little dome with two little chairs and coffee. And I had that instead of my coffee. And so for step three, I've learned now that by praying, things do happen. My desire to binge and my desire to do lots of other things goes away. On what I love, going all the way up to step 11, that bit in the big book about before you retire at night and then when you get up in the morning, there's an order in my life now. There's all the promises for step 9 that I'll look back at my history and I won't feel really horrified about it. My twin does. She's very obese still. But I don't feel horrified because my history coming to OA has been turned around and it's using me for the things I'm doing now. So I had to give up the Breathing Society. I had to just say, here I am, God, and I'm actually going to be willing and do things. It says in step three, in the step three book, that you, in that chapter, there's a key and only you can turn it. And you have to have willingness to turn the door. So I think that would be my message, really. I had to have that willingness. And a lot of the promises have come true, and I've been abstinent now for 2.5 years.
Thank you.